This summer, the Alaska Marine Highway System weathered its first strike in more than 40 years. The fleet remained tied to dock for 11 days while the state and largest ferry union worked through a federal mediator to hammer out a contract. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick takes a look at how it happened and what striking ferry workers achieved.
It was a sunny afternoon, and the state's flagship ferry, Columbia, was loaded with hundreds of passengers and cars preparing to depart for Bellingham, Washington. Then, with little apparent warning, half the crew walked off. Some picked up placards and signs and formed a picket line at Ketchikan's ferry terminal. The captain called the Columbia's stunned passengers for an impromptu announcement.
My name is Josh McGrath. I'm the captain on board. I just came on board today.
Terry Martinson of Petersburg recorded the July 24 scene on her smartphone. The captain explained that the Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific had called a strike. It was out of his hands.
So we are here until the IBU returns. We can't legally sail the ship without them.
That day, Martinson told Petersburg's KFSK she was trying to get her daughter to Tennessee to start college. She said the situation was fluid.
They've said that it would be probably a few days, and if it goes on too long, then they'll just basically cancel this sailing and go to the next week's sailing if the strike were to break up.
It took the state and IBU 9 days to resolve the contract dispute. The Alaska Marine Highway System didn't get back up and running until 2 days later. In all, more than 8,300 passengers were affected, along with more than 2,300 vehicles. Refunds cost the system upwards of $3.2 million. It was the busiest time of year and caught many, including Governor Dunleavy's administration, off guard.
It surprised me as much as it surprised the rest of Alaska.
Department of Administration Commissioner Kelly Chewbacca led the state's negotiating team with the IBU. So why did the ferry's largest union strike?
So, Jacob, I think that is something we have to go to IBU for, because I still puzzle over that.
It wasn't something that just happened overnight.
Rob Arnold works as chief purser on the ferry Malaspina and is a member of IBU's negotiating team.
The state just kept amping up the, you know, pressure on us, and we just had to do what we had to do with economic sanctions.
The contract negotiations predated the Dunleavy administration. The IBU's 430-odd members were still working off their last contract that expired in 2017. This year, they were asked to forego any wage adjustments. That would be up for negotiating next year. Both sides presented what they termed their final and best offer before the state declared an impasse.
86% of our members rejected that offer and gave us authorization to strike.
So what did the IBU win? First, it got a 3-year contract. The state had been offering a 1-year term. The union workers still have their pay frozen at 2017 levels, but they'll get 1.5% increases in 2020 and the year after that. From the state's perspective, the IBU agreed that its members would begin contributing toward their health plan in 2021. But they also don't automatically lose coverage during months when they're not working. The union also softened its stance on pay hikes. Chewbacca says higher wages translate into less money to run the system. Ferry workers are hourly. IBU members are only paid when they're crewing a ship.
So what we were really arguing for this whole time is we were trying to maximize the number of routes we could run so we could maximize service to the coastal communities and maximize the number of hours that these IBU employees could work.
There's some important context here. The legislature only appropriated $46 million to the ferry system for the next fiscal year. That's around $44 million less than last year, amongst years of cost cutting. Under a draft winter schedule released last month, some coastal communities stand to lose service for 7 months starting in October. Arnold says the 11-day shutdown could serve as a wake-up call.
This is like a preview of coming attractions. So I think people realize, hey, this is what's going to really happen. And so there's more focus on the ferry.
But both sides say they compromised and reached a fair contract.
You know, they say the best negotiation is when there's compromise and people are not happy when they walk away from a table. So I think that's kind of what happened here.
Chewbacca credits the IBU's leadership in helping to end the strike. She says by the time they'd reached a deal, the tension in the room had lifted.
And that's very unusual at the end of an action like this, at the end of a labor dispute, to end on a positive note with the union representatives, and I was really happy about that.
There are still finer points both agreed on. The union also dropped a number of its demands. Members won't be able to pick which vessels they work on, and out-of-state workers will continue to be paid less per hour than Alaska residents. IBU members will no longer pay for hotels out of pocket. That's been an issue with the fleet's new Alaska-class ferries, so-called day boats, that lack crew quarters, forcing crew members to overnight in hotels between voyages, then wait weeks to be reimbursed by the state. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.